Rebecca.
And I'm Krabeshni.
And welcome to Building with Builders.
Our podcast where we believe that building is fun.
Super fun.
So much fun.
Build Her Collective was created to help women with building and renovating. And we believe that with the right tools, everyone can build. For us, it's all about encouraging women to take back control of the building process and really achieve their dreams.
We are women in the building industry, and as developers, builders, and project managers, it's our passion to share everything we know with other women doing the same. And that's why we've created this podcast for you.
So if you love all things building,
you're into design,
keen on the numbers,
about to renovate,
thinking and dreaming of that forever home and what it would look like,
or even developing for profit,
then you've found your family.
Subscribe to our podcast and follow our journey over at buildhercollective.com.au.
Welcome back to our podcast, Building with Build Her. I'm Krabeshni, and I'm here today with the Build Her 8 ladies. We are coming to a point of the project now where everything is coming to a head. All of our decisions, all of our painstaking consideration is coming to light. And it's a super, super, super exciting time of the project, but it's also a little bit stressful because everything that we decided is coming to light. And we thought it'd be super fun to sit down with the Build Her 8 and talk about their experience and how they've gone about being involved and what they've got next coming up. So first off the rank, lucky first, lovely Ivy.
Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for coming along, Ivy.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. I'm on a little retreat, but it's always great to see you ladies.
Now, Ivy, do you want to share a little bit about the Build Her 8 experience and how has the project or how's the JV helped you in getting closer to your developing goals?
Look, for me, my previous project, I own a built, and for me, that was a really lonely experience. And so, I mean, in many ways, this is almost the polar opposite. I was not alone in any of the tasks that I did. And one of the things I really enjoyed was, you know, just catching up with everyone every fortnight and just kind of understanding. And what I realized was that working in a team meant that you can, you know, there's just like a bigger energy and you can do more with a bigger group. And I kind of put it down to two things, right? I think that, you know, you have a complementary set of skills that can, you know, just create a larger project. It has more momentum, has more energy. And, you know, from a talent and experience point of view, there's more on the table. And then the other major benefit is just more fun because it's just like everyone's, this is interesting characters and everyone, you know, might not have different opinions all the time, but it actually makes for a more interesting and fulfilling experience. So that's like, that was my biggest takeaway, I'd say.
That's a song, isn't it? Girls Just Have More Fun. Am I making that up?
Yeah, I love that song.
Oh, it's Whitney.
Is it?
Is it Girls? No, Girls Just Want to Have Fun. Well, I'm not singing in this podcast, so I'm gonna kill that thought right now. Well, thanks, Ivy. I'd love to hear and jump over to Alison. Do you want to share a little bit about your experience and what the project maybe has helped you in your future?
Yeah, I guess for me, the project's been great. Coming from a smaller project where I was similar to Ivy, I own a built. It was a much smaller renovation. I'd never knocked down and rebuilt one house, let alone two side-by-side houses. So for me, it's been, I guess, a bit of an accelerator in terms of going from owner building through to being on site all the time and working with lots of different people and working with different designers and project managers and builders and collaboratively coming together and doing all of that. Being able to work from conception all the way through to development and completion is a really big stepping stone. And I just feel like it's going to propel me for my next project. I already feel 100 times more confident that I know what I'm doing. I'm more confident with the trades. I'm more confident on site. I'm more confident with my vision. And so it's just been a fantastic opportunity just to kind of get a bit of a, you know, a kickstarter, I guess, and just more confidence, and then being surrounded by like-minded women who are on the same course. It's just this camaraderie and this, you know, togetherness has been really fantastic and a benefit, I suppose, that I didn't really expect from the project.
Well, in a way, I think of it like building Arsenal. So So the more experiences and more little situations that you've navigated yourself through, the likelihood is in the future those same situations will prop up. And it's uncanny how many times the same situation will pop up.
That's right. And, you know, going to site and I just picked John's brain and, you know, he's like, oh, what do we want to do here? And we'll talk through it. And then I'm learning the process of building as well. So I can then take that to my next project. Like it's invaluable, really.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing. Omar, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Thanks, Kravashni. Well, for me, I have never worked on a project before. So this was my, I guess, opportunity to take that deep dive into working on a project. For me, when I started the Builder 8, I was also working on my own personal project of a knockdown rebuild of two townhouses. And what I learned through the tendering and quoting process was understanding the cost of building in today's market. So I went out to a number of trades like plastering, tiling, concrete, and I got all the quotes. And that really built my confidence in the numbers that I was putting into my feasibility, which for me, when I first started, was just guesstimates. And to actually have concrete quotes, which were quite similar to my build, and plugging them into my feasibility gave me confidence in my numbers. What eventually happened, though, was that my townhouse build, the cost of that went up and the end sales price perhaps didn't go up as much in my market. So that project did not stay feasible. So I've had to pivot from working on my townhouse project to working on my own home. And I had the confidence to change my mindset on that because I knew the numbers. And for me, I think that was the biggest takeaway. So it's still all positive. I've still got Rose Street and that project will go ahead, but in a very different way. And I'm working on my own house at the moment.
That's fantastic. I actually hear what you're saying there. We get asked the question a lot in Q&As, like, what is this going to cost or how much should I estimate? And actually, honestly, the reality is that until you start breaking it down into scopes of works and getting quotes for things, you can't just guess how much something's going to cost, because there's engineering, there's reinforcing, there's things that are in the documents that you don't know might represent thousands of dollars. And I think that's a really interesting one, to be able to go out and ask for a quote and ask for it with confidence, knowing what you're asking for. Fantastic. Over to you, Priscilla.
Hi, thanks for having me. Yeah, for me, I think the opportunity to be close to a project, I mean, this is my first development where I've sort of played a bit of an active role and been so close to it end to end from concept through to completion. And for me, I think it's really being able to see that whole process play out and the insights. And the most, I guess for me, most useful thing that I've sort of learned is just knowing the detail of the trades and the overlap between trades as well. And that's really helped with getting the quotes as well for both Rathmines and also, I guess, my investment property that I sold as well needed to touch up. But knowing little things like a certain task that needs to be done on site, it's not just, you know, before I sort of joined in this, you sort of think, oh, the builder does that or the carpenter does that. But there's actually lots of other trades where there's tasks that overlap across the board. And that's where I think having that knowledge, you can be smart about it and ask the right questions, understand how they go about doing the job and finding the right fit. And also hopefully getting a better quote as well, price-wise as well, and getting the right person to do the right job. Getting a builder isn't always, I mean, obviously the builder will be able to do a lot and cover a lot, but there's probably other trades that can help do the same job quicker with, you know, the same quality of work and craftsmanship as well. So for me, that's that knowledge has really been helpful in giving me the confidence and the insight into sort of planning and looking at, well, what can I do next and where can I use this knowledge, whether in the future it's renovating my own home or another development. I think that's something I'll take and be able to use. It's definitely useful knowledge.
I think that's a really fantastic one. You've just got me thinking, actually. Interestingly, when you're looking at a project, you should be thinking about your delivery model and how are you going to plan out the delivery. So knowing what project triggers hiring a builder or is the right complexity for a builder, and then knowing what projects where you could manage the trades actually makes a huge difference to your bottom line. That's a fantastic one. Thank you. And how about we hear from you, Louise?
Hi, Krabashni. Thank you for having me.
Hello.
My insights are probably similar to others in many ways. You know, it's a larger scale project, two big houses. So you have a greater understanding of the work that's involved. I think also you get great insight because we've been working directly with the builder and probably had more access on site. It's been great to understand some of the technical challenges for building and how that translates to costs. And just, you know, further exposure to the whole process, but particularly that building component.
You've also taken on managing some of the tricky paperwork side, so working through the subdivision and understanding all the I's and all the T's on our finance agreements. Do you have anything you might want to share that you've picked up through that experience?
Well, I think there's a few that we've sort of covered through some of the joint venture blogs, et cetera, but it's really about understanding, you know, what's involved and what the numbers are, what the roles and responsibilities and commitments are, not to be afraid to ask questions. I think the other thing is the difference between development funding and going to a bank and getting a construction loan, and the fees and charges and the benefits of each, I think, has been another insight for the group as well. So that's an experience probably that we wouldn't have been exposed to previously with development funding.
Absolutely. Thanks, Louise. And lucky last, Rachel.
Hi. That's so annoying because you got me last and everyone said everything that I was going to say. Probably the biggest thing that I've loved about the JV, which sometimes I haven't said as much as I should, is just working with everyone. So having people that you can constantly lean on, and whether it's like the, you know, ordering of materials or the finances or checking on things or having a chat with the other designer about what's what and what should do. Like that's been an amazing, amazing point in the whole JV. I think for me going into what I've loved about it as well, the confidence. So yes, there's been stuff that I've had to pivot along the way. There's been a lot of learnings and takings from like being able to make decisions quickly and sometimes as organised as you can be, because we have been, and there's been essentially 10 of us on the project, like working with a builder continuously and with our trades and stuff, there's always stuff that comes up. So that's been really good to have a team of people that you can rely on to get through that stuff. The biggest takeaway for me is like now I've got the confidence, I'm selling Carnegie, I'm ready to do my own thing. And I think knowing the people that I can rely on through that process for the next one will give me a heaps of confidence to be able to do better in the next one. Not better, better in my one. You can't get better than Rathmines.
No competition.
Sorry,
Talking to your ladies tonight, like I've just suddenly thought about like 50 million questions I want to ask you all. But I'm not going
to. There was only one.
I know, because I promised only one. But I want to pull out, I think, you know, two scenarios. And this is actually a question for Rachel and Al. One of the things that people don't realise they can do is workshop their design solutions with their suppliers and with their trades. Now, you ladies did a bit of work with our kitchen supplier, so Kitchens by CJ. I always said that wrong. Do you want to talk about the process of how you worked with him to kind of workshop that design to get it to a point where it was making sense from a design point of view, but it also was working within the budget that we needed it to? And it's a beautiful, they're beautiful kitchens. So what the ladies haven't done is skimped on quality or design output, but there's some things that you can be aware, like you can be mindful of.
Yeah. Do you want to go on that, Al?
Yeah.
Well, you started the relationship, so that relationship started. But I can definitely talk about the process after.
No, it was great working with CJ's because they were super keen to work with us as well. They'd always, you know, they'd earmark build her for projects, and they contacted us. And Chris and Jenna are just super, super nice people, and they're really open. So it provides you, when you deal with suppliers that are open to your ideas and they're open to workshopping solutions with you to get the best output but also stay within your budget, it's a win-win. So working with them has been fantastic because we've been able to, you know, go through the different materials that we wanted to use to get the look we wanted to get, and Chris was able to go, okay, well, perhaps if we did this you know, we could bring the budget down here, or if we use this material, we can, you know, this is how we can stay within our desired budget, but also get this beautiful kitchen at the end.
And I think also, like, I guess this gave me a really good understanding of working with clients as well, right, was that you can come up with that conceptual design in the initial stages. And it wasn't just one workshop session that we did. We did, you know, there was probably three or four actual sit downs. And, you know, you're talking about anything from, you know, how do you pull back on design where you're not, you know, what compromising the actual layout or design of it, but you can actually bring down the cost. And I guess working with, you know, a joiner, like Chris is so knowledgeable, like he's been in the industry for ages and so is Jenna. And to be able to work with people that are just as passionate as you and get ideas in terms of, well, what's the aesthetic look that you're trying to do, but also meet budgets, that's worked for us really well. And they've been really open to that. Like, it's been great.
And particularly along the way with, you know, as they're installing at the moment, you know, it's been, you know, there's things that come up and there's always things that are going to come up, but you have the relationship enough with them that you can actually say, hey, guys, this is not, you know, this is not quite working. What can we do to fix this? And they come up with solutions and they're happy to do it.
And when you talk about other suppliers too, creeps, like even, you know, your stone or your timber and stuff, I think, like, quite honestly, we talk about it a lot, is that having that relationship with your trades and your builder is so important, because it just means they're able to go on that ride with you on that journey.
Well, I think in building, every decision is an opportunity for an error and for a mistake. And I think that the quality comes through at the end because there are so many opportunities for things to go wrong. It's the commitment to everyone along the way to deliver a high quality product at the end of the day. And I think that's what stands when you walk through them and you feel it straight away. Thank you. That one's for Ivy. I didn't run it past you. It's a follow-up question. Now, Ivy, you took on our premise to build a sustainable 7-star rated home from the get-go. And I know you're really passionate about it. Now, there are some really amazing features that we have been able to include in the house. And you've been a real contributor towards that. Do you want to talk a little bit around the system that we have and how it all works together?
Yeah, so I think it all started, I don't want to take all the credit from it, because it really started with Rebecca's desire to say, you know, we're going to do a 7-star energy rated home. And we kind of took that on board and said, well, you know, that is definitely the start of sustainability, of building a sustainable home, but then how do we go about doing that and making it truly sustainable? And the decision, and it was a very difficult decision actually, the difficult decision we made was to actually go all electric, which ends up costing a little bit more upfront. And so actually what people find is the developers who don't typically do it. You know, you do have a few, but it's not standard in the industry right now. And we took that decision because we wanted to make that desire to build two sustainable homes really to heart. And that led to a number of other decisions once we made that. And once we decided to do all electric, we were like, okay, well, what does that mean? We need solar power. We need Tesla battery to support those panels that are on the roof. We then added on EV chargers that meant that, you know, even if the buyers don't have an electric vehicle today, those houses are future-proof because we know EVs are coming very soon. You know, it meant that our hot water system is then also powered efficiently by a heat pump that's also then powered by your solar panels. It led to so many decisions that actually then was a holistic thing. And so, yeah, and I think that's something that we should all really be proud of, because I think I look at those homes and they are beautiful, but also they are so functional. And I think we did them in a very responsible way.
So this one's a trifecta question for Priscilla, Louise and Omar. I think one of the things that often gets overlooked is how much paperwork and logistics and quoting and updating budgets and ordering things actually has to happen on a build. Now, you three ladies really help to support that back-end system. That's the backbone to any successful project. Do you have any takeaways from having to go through all those, like the role of that, and really, really pull it together so that, because having three people work on it is quite hard in itself, really coordination and communication between you three?
I was just going to say, off the back of like what we were sort of talking about before, I think it's also been learning around with this whole process of getting quotes and, you know, speaking to the designers, the build team. It's not just the actual quoting and the coordination. Like, what I've really learned is how to actually pull together what are the details that that particular trade needs to know for you to be able to get an accurate quote, and what is it that either the design team have specified that's unique that we should call out upfront, both whether it's from understanding whether that particular trade does that sort of work or if they've got experience doing it, and also whether the actual build team have specified it needs to be done in a particular way, has really helped me understand the whole process of pulling together the brief and then just learning enough to be able to ask the questions as well to know, and just hearing them also come back with questions. I started along the process to start really getting a sense of how you can start building that rapport with tradies and how you can start sort of knowing whether they're good at what they do and they know what they're talking about. And that's something that I can't say when I started this, I had the confidence to do. Like, I wouldn't know what question to ask, what are the details they need to know, and how do you tell whether this particular person does exactly the same thing as that person? Like, how do you decide who's better? Like, you know, when their quotes come back. So for me, I think having gone through that whole process with the team and having the support of, you know, everyone here to bounce things off or ask questions on, and John, it's really helped me anyway to get through that process. And then obviously working with Omar and Lou when I'm like, I don't know, well, where's this and where's that? So, yeah.
I think from an accounting perspective, you know, just the insights about how many thousands of accounts you need to have in place to just break down all the construction items. So if you think about it, when you do feasibility, you have one construction figure based on, you know, whether it's 2,500, 3,500 a square metre, whatever, and you know, you come up with a figure. But then actually when things start happening, there's so many areas that needs to be broken down to. You know, if you think about it, even just from a kitchen perspective, it's the joinery, the sinks, the taps, the handles, you know, so many different things that you need to break the budget down into to get a realistic figure to know whether you're going to be on track or not. And then to be able to track it, there's actually a lot of work because, you know, you have to check off which every invoice, you know, may go across a couple of different areas. So, you know, to be able to track that, there's a lot of work involved in that actually. So I suppose that's, you know, that's the other insight that we've had through this process as against, you know, just engaging a builder and getting, you know, 8 invoices through the course of the progress claims. So, and I think even the insight, talking of progress claims, the getting, you know, each of the progress claims through with the development finance has been a learning in itself, because that's involved a QS coming out on site and actually confirming we only pay based on what we assess the costs that you've actually spent or built to date. So there's a fair bit of work involved in that and negotiation around that.
I would probably have to agree with everything that Priscilla said with regards to getting quotes from trades. And I found that coming into the project, the Buildher Collective, Rebecca and Kravashni, had an amazing filing system in our Dropbox. And I would have to say that being organized in that way has been so helpful. Understanding where to find the documents and where things are saved and having everyone understand where things need to be has been really helpful. So just being extremely organized and understanding where all the documents are saved has been a huge savior for me. And of course, Priscilla's master tender document where we put all of the information of the trades we've contacted, who we've engaged, when payments are made, and having one central, you know, document where everyone can see what's going on has been incredibly helpful.
Thank you. Sorry to throw those doozies at you, ladies, but I couldn't help myself.
I'm just reminiscing, actually, thinking back now, how many times were we asking, where's the latest set of drawings saved?
It's in that folder. Now, before we wrap up this podcast, would you like to go through, everyone can turn yourselves off mute, And I'd love to go around and for you to say, what is your favourite part of the two homes? So we've got two houses. We've got the North House. We've got the South House. No competition. Do you have a favourite moment or a favourite part of the house that you want to share with us really quickly? And we're going to start off with the lucky elephant.
Oh gosh, what's my, I don't have it. It is like, it feels like a little baby. Like it's obviously North House. It's, I love the North House. I love the South House too, but it just feels like it is a little, it's my baby. It's been my baby for the last couple of years. My favourite part, it's going to be my kitchen. When I see the kitchen come to life, it's going to be, I can just feel it in my waters. It's going to be
perfect. Ivy?
Well, I don't play favourites, so I'm just going to say the 10 kilowatts of solar panels that we have in each room. And there are exactly, I think there are exactly the same number of panels, and I think they both look amazing, and they're going to provide amazing power to both houses.
Good save, Ivan. Good save.
I think for me, I'm also not going to play favourites, but just the open living spaces that go into the backyard, and they're both obviously, like, I just love the fact how we haven't done the same for the two houses, that they're both unique and they both have amazing light into the living space and into a unique backyard area. And obviously one has the pool and one doesn't, but they're both, I'd take any of them any day, and I could just see myself hanging out there all day long. So yeah, for me, it's the communal spaces where you can really see a family of the owners spending a lot of their time there and just enjoying it. So
I obviously love both houses. And I think if you talk about moments, like things that stick out in my mind. So when I go through the North House, it's that, I don't even know what it's called, Alice, but the arch that you've got in the door.
In the kitchen.
Yeah, in the kitchen. And that's like a moment. So it sticks in my mind. And then in the South House, I don't know, every time I go up those stairs and I come to that curved wall, and then it just opens up into this lovely light, and then it's like a peekaboo into the bathroom. That is like my favourite part at the moment.
So you're going to say the South House all moments, like which one?
Yeah, but that's, I don't know, every time I walk up the stairs, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm just like, yeah, bamboozled by it. It's beautiful, like the light.
To Rach's credit, like that's the way she designed, that's what I learned off Rach too, is that every space through the South House had its moments, so that, you know, in that room she'd already visualised what that moment was, and she was, you know, it was really important to her to keep to those moments, and I think that was a really nice way to kind of keep a cohesive space and make sure that every room had a really beautiful feeling to it.
Oh, that's nice. Thanks, Al.
For me, I would have to say it is the facade. So I went to site today and I saw the facade for the first time in a long time, and I just looked at it, even though it was pouring down with rain, looked at how beautiful they both were. So different, but so beautiful, and they both have this striking street presence. So for me, it's just that first impression that I absolutely love, and I can't pick. They both look fantastic.
And Lou?
I love the curves on the South House and the painted brick. You know, I think that's my personal favourite in terms of the facade. But then, see, the North House has got the pool and it's got the gate to the park at the rear. So, you know, that's great outside. So, yeah, I can't pick between the children.
I'll go last. I went there today after actually many weeks of not being able to go down to site. And what struck me in both houses, hilariously, is a very well-placed windows in both houses with views to the greenery in the park. I have to shout out there to Ben Callery, our architect, and Rebecca as well, who worked on the design. Those highlight windows, they tell a story, and they tell a story that both those houses have been considered for the occupant inside, but also to the nature outside, and I think they actually, it's stunning. So when you walk in, not only are you wowed by the impact of the interiors, but you get this great connection with your outdoors, outside of just the back gardens and all that nature that's around in Fairfield. It's absolutely stunning. I love that. And I actually didn't get a chance to do a proper walkthrough. I'm going back because it started pouring down in the South House. I know. Well, that's us tonight. Thank you so much for sharing all your experiences and, you know, your deepest secrets with me. I want to wrap up tonight's podcast by doing a bit of a shout out to Rebecca and John, our partners in the JV, also partners in the Build Hooray, but also our lovely and very accommodating builders. Big shout out and a big thank you to John for always accommodating us on site. I can't imagine what it must feel like to get phone calls from 8 different women about the same thing. And then probably talk to Rebecca about it at night. It's been really fantastic.
Thanks for listening to Building with Build Her. We'd love for you to spread the word.
For show notes, links and downloads and other awesome resources and freebies, head to buildhercollective.com.au. And don't forget, that's Build Her with an H-E-R.
And if you enjoyed this episode, it would mean so much to both of us if you could take a minute or two to leave a review.
And don't forget to subscribe so you can listen next time as we talk all things building and women making their mark in the building industry.